Greetings, everybody. This is John Loeffler. Welcome to Lifetime Income. And today's Lifetime Income is an encore presentation of a program we heard earlier in the year.
The Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. You know, baby boomers, they were people born between 1946 and 1964. 10,000 baby boomers are retiring every day, and they're going to continue doing that for the next 19 years, if you can believe that. 75.4 million boomers will be heading into retirement over the next two decades. Now, sadly, if we look at males aged 55 and over, 30% of them have no retirement savings, which means they're aiming for Social Security to provide what they need in retirement. An additional 26% of Americans have less than $50,000 in savings. Now, according to a recent survey, you should have, by the time you reach age 50, if you're goaling some kind of retirement, you should have at least $213,000 in savings by age 50. Only 22% of Americans are on track to reach that goal. Age 60, an average of $260,000 in savings, and only 26% of Americans are on track. I think that's significant, Jim, because it tells us that some people make up the difference, but very few. It's only a difference between 26 and 22% between age 50 and age 60. So would you say, based on what Professor Merton says, in a retirement crisis?
You know, John, I would have to say so. I mean, there are a number of studies. You read about them almost every single month. The main thing that if you take a look and boil it down to, what's different today? In other words, why are we having a crisis today than we didn't have it before? And I think it was pretty simple. If we look at our parents, they basically had a defined benefit pension plan. They worked for a company. When they retired, they probably got 80% of their salary in a pension that lasted the rest of their life. And whatever shortfall they had was made up by Social Security and whatever savings. Well, if you look at where we are today, the defined benefit pension plans are gone, except for unless you work for government, and they will be gone in many ways in the next decade. We've also had two bear markets that have devastated portfolios if you take a look at what has happened since the beginning of the new millennium. The other thing is the average Social Security benefit is around $1,300, a little over $1,300 compared to the average wage, which is about $47,000. The other thing that we have versus what our parents had is we're living longer. Longevity risk is now a major factor in retirement because we've been adding 2 years of life expectancy almost every single decade. So if you look at some of the statistics, and depending on who you're looking at, a male age 65 today can live for an additional 19 years. A woman age 65 will live an additional 21 years. And here's another factor. If you're a woman listening to this program, one out of four women will live to 92 years of age. And there's also talk about down the road, Social Security and Medicare are in trouble. So that's why, John, you're seeing more and more experts are calling this a retirement crisis.
So we're calling this program today the Four Horsemen of the Retirement Apocalypse. And unfortunately, there's no way to work the word retirement and apocalypse into one word. And before we start enumerating them, what are the Four Horsemen here?
You know, there's four of them as we take a look at retirement. One is longevity. As I just mentioned, Americans are living longer. Second is medical cost, which is also associated with longevity. Third is financial repression. We're looking at the lowest interest rates in recorded history. And number four is stagnation and reversion to the mean. So it's just all kinds of numbers out there, John, that is just making so many things different today. And what I want to do is just take a look at retirement planning by the numbers. Social Security, and this is for 2017, the cost of living for Social Security this year was 0.3%. The average Social Security monthly benefit is $1,360, and the maximum is $2,687. So, you know, people aren't getting $5,000, $6,000, $8,000 a year in pensions unless you work for government. If you take a look at the cost of Medicare, and it used to be the cost of Medicare was the same for everyone. This year, they've gone up, and depending on what your income is, it's gone up dramatically. For example, our Medicare cost went up over 22%. So if you make $85,000 or less, and you're married, you're paying $109 a month for Medicare. If you make between $170 and $214, you're paying $187.50 a month. If you make between $214 and $320, you pay $267.90 a month. If you make between $320 and $428, you pay $348.30 a month. And if you make more than $428,000, your Medicare premiums are $428.60. I mean, when you think about it, that's quite a jump. I mean, if I take a look at, let's say $109 and I take a look at $429, John, you are paying 294% more monthly if you're in the upper income bracket. It all used to be the same, and that's not the case anymore. But the numbers get even worse. If you take a look at what the Social Security tax is today, it's 12.4%, and then you add 2.9% for Medicare tax, so it's 15.35. The base on which that tax is assessed is gone up to, for 2017, bad news for you if you're working this year, the base will be assessed against $127,200. And if you earn more than beyond that level, a certain level of income, you also pay up to 9/10 of an additional tax if you make over 250, for a total of an additional 3.8% tax or Medicare tax on your earned income. Now, they've increased some of the limits in which you can put away into retirement savings, $5,500 for an IRA, $6,500 if you're age 50 and older. For 401k plans, it's $18,000 and $24,000 if you're over age 50. And also, like for SEP plans, you can put $54,000. And also, the maximum payout on a defined benefit plan is $215,000 a year. So the numbers have gone up, but most significantly, where you're seeing the largest increase is basically in the income levels for Medicare, which have gone up substantially. Like I'm saying, you can almost be paying three times as much for your monthly Medicare premiums. And we'll get into one of the horsemen is medical, but we'll get into that as we get later into this program. But for example, if you look at some of the statistics that we were talking about, John, where we talked about savings. And the savings there, it does not look good, because if you take a look at men, 1/3 of the men in this country have zero savings. And if you take a look at what's the next category, if you look at between $10,000 and $49,000 of savings, that is only 10% of the population. So if you go beyond that level, 300,000 or more, there's only 13% of the population. And women are less prepared than men for retirement. Now, why that's important, as a woman, you will live longer than most men, statistically, for by several years. And if you look at, for example, the survivor benefits of Social Security, 85% of them are women. And there's a 1 out of 4 chance, if you're a woman, you're going to live to beyond the age 90. So that does not look well for any woman, or actually for the public at large. If you take a look at, for example, the difference between generations, and here's the thing that really surprised me, is it's not just boomers that are in trouble. They did a survey on generations, boomers, Gen Xers, and millennials. Over 42% of millennials have not saved for retirement. It's almost 30% for Gen Xers aged 35 to 54, and it is 28% for boomers age 55. And so when you think about it, 42% of all those millennials, and as we have talked about here on lifetime income, one of the real keys to success going forward to meeting your retirement goals is starting early. If you start at age 25, you have to put aside very little money. Actually, probably the cost of going out to dinner, a good steak dinner once a month, you add that to matching 401k with most employers, that's all you need to have $1 million when you retire. So we have a real bad situation here, John, with only maybe 25% of individuals over age 55 have a portfolio of over 300,000. 75% over age 40 are behind on savings. I mean, it's just one of those facts you take a look at, and that's why it is being called America's next major financial crisis is retirement.
All right, those are the baseline stats that we're looking at here. Let's look at the four horsemen. First one is longevity.
Well, let's take a look. And I took this from the Social Security website. A male age 65 today will live on average to a little over age 84. And if you live to 85, there's a greater chance, one out of five, that you'll live to 90 and beyond. A woman age 65 today has a life expectancy, according to Social Security, 86.6. Now, one quarter, one out of four individuals age 65 will live past age 90. And one out of 10 of you age 65 and over will live past the age of 95. I have quite a few clients that are living in retirement homes. One I can think of in particular has quite a few centenarians that are living. So as we take a look historically, every decade is added two more years to the lifespan. So there's some of you that are listening to this program today that could be living long enough to become a centenarian. So there's all kinds of things that I guess, John, you know, when you take a look at 40, 50 years ago, you know, when they put Social Security into effect in 1933, the average lifespan for a male was age 65. You're taking a look at today, that's when the average male is starting retirement is age 65. So it goes to show you over 80, 90 years, how much we have increased lifespan with more knowledge about what makes us healthy, increases in medicine. You know, you may not like taking drugs, but look what those drugs are doing to extending a person's life.
Well, longevity sounds like a great thing. You know, you always see this in movies. We found the key to eternal life here on Earth. You know, you'll never die, blah, blah, blah. But there are implications to that because you have to eat while you're still here and all sorts of other things have to happen. What are the implications of that?
Well, number one, if you take a look at life expectancy, let's say, let's just round it off. You retire at age 65, you're going to live 20 years into retirement. What does that mean? It means you're going to be drawing down your assets over a longer period of time. So that's the first thing that comes in. Secondly, another thing that comes into play with longevity is a greater chance that one of you, between a married couple or even if you are single, will end up in a long-term care facility that can run as much as $100,000 a year. The other thing that this brings into question, because, you know, you don't know. A lot of people say, all right, well, I'm going to wait till I'm age 66, which is full retirement age for boomers today and 67 for Gen Xers and millennials. A lot of people say, oh, okay, I'll retire early. A lot of people are taking Social Security at age 62. The miscalculation that is done here on retirement is people that have retired early have not fully weighed the consequences of living a longer life. In other words, having enough assets to get you, if you're fortunate enough to live into your 80s and 90s, and wait till I get to medical expenses, I have a big shock for you when it comes to what you're going to end up paying. The other thing is, in a recent study, one out of five retirees will die broke. That's right. 20% of those retired will die broke. And more importantly, 70% of you 65 and older will need some type of long-term care, and that's not included when they do these average expenses of what you're going to shell out of pocket during your retirement. And there's a myth out there that people think, oh, Medicare or Medicaid will cover that. It doesn't. But the best that it'll cover is 30 days in a rehab facility. So the impact of longevity is you're going to need more money. Two, you probably need to retire later. And three, you need to shorten that drawdown because, you know, you take somebody that lives 20 years or somebody that can live 30 years or more. I can think of one client right now that's 97. I think she is 94. They retired at age 62. But once again, they were that generation. He received a defined benefit pension plan that'll last his entire lifetime and his wife's entire lifetime. They have Social Security. So between Social Security and their pension, they have lived a very good retirement life, and they've been able to salt away a lot of money. The only thing that he's really drawing down on, and that's by law, is he has to take out money out of his IRA because it's required by law. But John, that doesn't exist for a lot of people today. But, you know, fortunately for this individual, my client, is he had a defined benefit pension plan and, of course, Social Security for both him and his wife, which cover all their medical expenses.
Okay, time for horseman number two, which is?
Horseman number two is medical expenses. Now, you've heard that it's interesting because I always cite the Fidelity study. Fidelity does this every single year. And a couple of years ago, it was $220,000. Now, for 2017, if you are a couple age 65, you can plan on out-of-pocket expenses of $260,000 between the two of you. So basically, if you divide that by, if you take $260,000 and you divide that by 20 years in retirement, that is $13,000 a year you should be putting in your budget. Now, you ask, where does that money come from? What makes up this $260,000? One third of that will be what you'll pay the government in your Medicare premiums. The rest goes to co-payments, deductibles, drugs, out-of-pocket cost, and medical cost. And the out-of-pocket medical costs are accelerating with age. And here's the problem. This study is done on the average of individuals. If you make more money and live longer, the longer you live, in other words, if you're really in good health, you have longevity in family, the bad news, you're going to be one of those individuals that's going to shell out a lot more in medical expenses as a result of living longer. And let me just give you an example. And this was taken from actually a study in Barron's that came out this weekend. You might want to get a copy of it. The name of the article is called The Real Cost of Healthcare in Retirement. And what they did is they took a look at, remember when I said that if you make under $70,000, your costs are $109. However, when you start going up the ladder in income between $214,000 and $267,000 a year, your cost, annual healthcare cost for a healthy couple, 65 years old, at age 65, in today's dollars, your costs are $15,417. If you fast forward and go to, let's say, another age, at age 69, your cost is $17,452 annually. At age 75, you're paying over $29,000. At age 79, you're paying $38,000 a year. At age 83, you're paying close to $49,000 a year. And at age 89, you're paying $62,000 a year. And when you take a look at Medicare, it covers the basics, you know, part A, what you don't pay for, that's hospital. And then part B, which is doctor bills, which is what you're billed for on Medicare. But it doesn't cover dental. It doesn't cover, let's say, vision care, cataracts, things like that. It doesn't cover the newer drug treatments that are coming out there. If there's a new great drug that does wonderful things, it's probably not going to cover that. It doesn't cover state-of-the-art medical equipment, personalized care, or long-term care. John, any idea, let's say you live to age 89, any idea what the out-of-pocket medical expenses will be for somebody?
No, I haven't thought about it.
This one is going to blow everybody's mind. If you are in that upper bracket at age 89, your out-of-pocket medical expenses in your lifetime will be $565,000, actually over $565,000. So you can just see there, expenses are going to go up. And especially, there's a real warning here for some individuals that are retiring early, especially when they have longevity in their family, their parents lived long, they're in top health, you know, barring some unforeseen accident, it's going to cost you a lot more money. And you need to factor that in, because in most retirement budgets, they take the current expenses and they'll say, all right, I'm spending, I don't know, $109 a month for Medicare for both of us. So we're paying $218 a month plus our supplement. Folks, that's not the right number to use. The right number to use is take a look at those inflation-adjusted numbers. Remember, the older you get, the higher those numbers are going to get, and they're going to start escalating for out-of-pocket costs, especially for, you know, drug prescription costs that aren't covered, new drugs that aren't covered, medical expenses, doctor's visits. There are a lot of things. And John, as you know, there are a lot of doctors today that do not take Medicare or insurance. For example, you know, in the last 4 years, as a result of the ACA Act, you know, I've seen my medical premiums go up. I am now on Medicare, but it's also taking longer and longer lead times to get in to see a doctor. When I called to schedule my annual physical, it was going to take 2.5 months to get to see my physician. I mean, you can always go to ER if you're sick. So I have what I call a concierge doctor. And the nice thing about it is I was able to get my blood work done at the regular place I have done, but I got my physical and I got in to see him within a week. So these are the kind of things that you have to end up paying, and they can be much, much higher. And one of the big mistakes I see people make is they don't include inflation adjusted healthcare cost in their budget. They're simply looking at, what am I spending right now? What is it going to cost me for my Medicare premium in year one? They aren't thinking what these costs are going to be over a 15, 20, 30 year period. And they could be quite substantial. And especially if you're one of the fortunate few that make over $70,000 a year.
Okay, let's move on. Horseman number three.
Horseman number three is what we call financial repression. We are looking, and we have talked about this so many times over the last 3 or 4 years on this program and on the weekend show, financial repression. You're looking at the lowest rates in recorded human history. And we still have central banks that are keeping rates artificially low. A good example, a 2-year treasury note, yes, they've gone up with the Fed rate hikes that have been started 2 years ago. A 2-year treasury is a little over 1.15%, and a 10-year treasury note is under 2.4%. And just to give you an example, if we were to go back to the year 2000, you could have got close to 7%. So imagine 7% versus a little over 2%.
You know, I don't think people build this in. This really struck me. I was at the supermarket and I was talking to the clerk about this looming battle between President Trump and Fed Chair Janet Yellen. And the woman behind me said, "Who's Janet Yellen?" And I thought, that's why you're in trouble. You know, because you don't understand this. Okay. But people don't understand, first of all, financial repression, low rates of returns, and also inflation, because inflation is chewing things up. And you can see that not just in the prices, but I don't know if you've noticed at the supermarket, but you're paying the same price for, say, a bag of chips that you used to, but you get less chips. Have you noticed that? They're doing that with candy bars and everything else. So having said that, let's look at an example here, which will actually illustrate this, because once you see it, it really go, wow, I didn't think of that before.
Well, let's take an example. Let's say Bob is age 51. He wants to retire in 15 years. That would be when he would be full retirement age for Social Security, age 66. So he's got 15 years to retirement. He's anticipating he will spend 20 years in retirement, according to the statistics. He thinks he can earn a 5% return, and he thinks that inflation will average about 2% of his lifetime. What he would like to do is save for, he figures between what he's going to get in Social Security, he's going to need $50,000 a year, inflation adjusted, to live the kind of lifestyle that he would like to live in retirement. Any idea what that number would be, John? Just curious, in 15 years, $50,000 a year, inflation adjusted?
No, I'd have to sit and run the numbers.
He would need $1,036,000 in order to meet that number. Now, let's translate this into, what does that mean he would have to save? Bob would have to put aside $48,000 a year for the next 15 years to reach his goal of $1,036,000 to have $50,000 inflation adjusted when he reaches age 66. Now, you compare that to 2000, when the real returns were 5% and 6%, to the real returns of today. John, the impact of financial repression is you almost have to save twice as much money today in order to meet your retirement goals.
Yeah, that's a little bigger chunk than you think. You hold your breath for a second and go, wow, I didn't realize it was that bad. All right, let's move on to the fourth horseman.
Well, the fourth horseman is called stagnation and reversion to the mean. I mean, if you take a look at what this has done, since the new millennium, since the year 2000, we have had two bear markets, 2000 to 2002 and 2007 to 2009, where the S&P lost over 40 to 45%. In fact, if you were invested in tech stocks or NASDAQ stocks in the year 2000, you probably lost closer to 70%. And here's a fact, as a result of two bear markets, and especially the one in 2007 and 2009, is a vast majority of boomers got scared and didn't go back into the market. They basically said, you know what, that's it. I'm never going back into stocks again. So they missed this 250% run-up that we've seen in the stock market since March 9th of 2009. Secondly, low interest rates have drastically damaged the rate of return savers are getting on money. In fact, I don't need to tell many of you, if you've been in a money market fund, you've gotten 0%. If you've been at the bank, you probably got 0.5%, although those rates have gone up to 1% or more. So you have not gotten the rate of return since the last bear market by several factors. One, you probably didn't go back into the stock market, or many of you avoided it. Secondly, if you were in savings, you were getting barely nothing for it. Heck, I can think of treasury bond funds that were paying under 3%. Another factor that has hit boomers, and this is what I call stagnation, the economic growth rate over the last 8 years in this economic recovery has averaged 2.1% a year versus 3% to 4% on average since World War II. Another factor that has hit a lot of boomers is many boomers were downsized or they lost their jobs in the Great Recession. And even those that have managed to come back into the workforce, many of them aren't earning the same level of income that they've earned, let's say, before they got laid off. The other factor is wage inflation or wage growth in wages has been very stagnant. So, you know, we have those factors. Then the other thing, when I talk about reversion to the mean, if we take a look at the PE ratio for the S&P 500, whether you want to look at where it is today, closer to 19, or it is times next year's earnings, which it's 21 if you look at trailing earnings, and it's close to 19 if you look at forward earnings. And then if you look at the Case-Shiller 10-year average, it's closer to 28. So this is the third highest priced stock market in history. The most highest priced market was the year 2000. Second highest was 1929. Third highest is where we stand today. And we know that anytime you have overpriced markets, we know what subsequently follows. If you go back to, for example, the year 2000, the S&P peaked in March of that year, and it would not exceed that peak until April of the year 2013. In other words, if you're invested in stocks, you went nowhere for 13 years. If we're looking at interest rates, we're looking at the lowest interest rates in 5,000 years. And if you take a look at where we bottomed last summer at 1.3%, and you take a look at where interest rates are when we're doing this show at closer to 2.4, if you were in a treasury bond fund, you lost money. There have been a number of studies that have come out lately. Jeremy Grantham at GMO has done a calculation. They do this every year. For the next 7 years, they expect a negative return, annual return for stocks, and an expected negative return for bonds over the next 7 years, and then Research and Associates did a study on asset allocation models, the typical 60-40% model that most financial planning software or robo-advisors use, 60% stocks, 40% bonds. That asset allocation mix stands a 0% chance of making a 5% rate of return the next decade. If you mix it up and put in undervalued stocks, emerging markets, some areas that are undervalued, and maybe small cap stocks, the best return over a 10-year period was 3%. So, John, what typically happens is when you have these high-priced markets, as we did in 2000, as we have now, as we did in, let's say, 1929, we know the subsequent returns that follow are much, much lower. It's just simple mathematics. Your people are having to pay more and more for a dollar's worth of earnings today. And because of financial repression, we're looking at low interest rates, meaning that as the Fed starts to raise interest rates, people will start to lose more money in their bonds, which is why they're predicting negative returns for bonds over the next 7 years, unless you own individual bonds, in which case your rate of return will be whatever interest rate you get on the coupon, and then when it matures, you'll get your money back.
If we put all of these facts together, what are the implications, and then what do you do to ward that off?
I mean, if you take a look at it, and this is one of the big mistakes, even Social Security has talked about the big mistake made in Social Security is taken at age 62. Because of longevity, because of the improper asset allocation mix, because of overvalued markets, people need to work longer. In other words, instead of retiring early, unless you're Larry, lots of bucks, you sold your company, you sulked away so much money, people are going to have to live longer. Number two, for many individuals, they're going to have to reduce their lifestyle. The lifestyle they enjoyed when they're working is going to be much different if they move into retirement. I mean, if you don't have the funds, you don't have the pension, something's got to give. Number three, and we're seeing this more and more, is a move to cheaper locale. That's why we did the show on this on the weekend a couple of years ago about Meredith Whitney's thesis that the emerging markets for the next couple decades is going to be the middle of the country from North Dakota all the way down to Texas. So you move to a cheaper locale, especially if you live in a high expensive area like California, which has housing that's 2.5 times the national average, or you live on the East Coast. And number four, when it comes to your portfolio, it's going to have more active management, and you're going to have to consider risk control, because we do know, as we've talked about on the weekend show, every recession was preceded by a Fed rate raising cycle. Every recession led to a bear market. What do we know right now? The Fed is engaged in a rate raising cycle, and they've indicated they're going to keep raising rates. Well, eventually they will raise rates far enough that will push the economy into a recession in a bear market, which means in a bear market, the worst thing that you could do is begin your retirement in a bear market and see your assets drop 40 and 50%.
So a lot of the ways that you can manage this are to reduce your lifestyle, live in a cheaper place where the cost of living is lower, be more active and aggressive in managing your portfolio, and then be very cognizant of risk.
Absolutely, because if you're getting ready to retire, look what two bear markets did to your portfolio, the one in the beginning of the decade, and then, of course, the great financial crisis of 2007 and 2009. Do you really, if you just retired or getting ready to retire, you want to go through this again for the third time? Just think what that would do to your retirement.
Don't forget, coming up tomorrow on the program, our guest is Elizabeth Morgan. She is a specialist on offshore trusts, something you're not going to want to miss right here on Lifetime Income. Now it's time for our real-life case study, in which we feature, well, obviously the name says it, the names of the people involved have been changed to protect their privacy, and we have slides on our website that illustrate the points being made so you can follow them along visually. All right, Jim, what is the study this week?
Okay, this week we're going to talk about Edward and Amy White. Ed is age 65, Amy's age 61. Both want to retire here in the next few years. Given longevity and filling out a health questionnaire, Ed is expected to live to age 90 and Amy age 95. You know, one of the things that really strikes me about doing plans today, John, and this just once again reflects one of the horseman trends of longevity. When we do these health questionnaires, we have a software program that's tied into actuarial studies with the life insurance company because, you know, they're concerned about how long people live because they pay out either medical insurance or they pay out life insurance proceeds. But it's interesting to see these ages 90 and beyond. 15 years ago, you know, we'd see people in their 80s when we did these calculations. Today, we're seeing more and more in the age 90. Anyway, getting back to risk tolerance, it's moderately conservative, and their investment objective is income with capital preservation. A little color on Ed and Amy. Ed is age 65. He's an engineer. He's worked as an engineer for a large defense contractor his entire career. Now, he's considering retirement given that he has seen many buyouts and is involved in another with his company. So he'll be retiring soon. And it's sort of an appealing proposition since he desires to spend more time, obviously, with friends, family, and also basically doing the things he's always dreamed of doing. I have a special affinity with Ed because his favorite hobby is sailing and golf. Well, I don't golf, but I do sail. Ed doesn't want to change his lifestyle heading into retirement. He basically wants to do the things, but he has a slight heart condition and has already had bypass surgery that could potentially require additional procedures in the future and some major losses. He decided to use us as an advisor because in the past, he's been overzealous in some of the risks that he's taken. Amy, on the other hand, has worked in the same salon for nearly two decades. She's built up many lifelong friends throughout the years. Although she enjoys what she does, she's finding it more difficult now due to her worsening arthritis. She's very healthy and has a long life expectancy, given her mother is still alive in her late 90s and her grandparents reached age 100. She's concerned about their needs after, let's say, one of the spouses passes away because, for example, she believes she will outlive Ed, given, let's say, the age difference of 4 years between them and also longevity in this family. So she tends to be a little bit more on the conservative side when it comes to investments and has a fear of losing what they have. Now, if we take a look at what's important to them, they want to retire in the next couple of years, managing medical costs, especially with longevity. They want to be able to maintain their lifestyle and maintain that purchasing power throughout their retirement. If we look at their budget now, it's $98,000 is essentials, $48,000 for discretionary, $146,000. Edward's salary, $160,000. Amy's salary, $50,000. So they have a surplus of $64,000. Looking at how that would change in retirement, the essential budget would drop by roughly $16,000 a year from 98 to 82. Their discretionary budget would actually go up from 48 to 51. So their expenses would be 133 against Social Security of 45,000, leaving them a shortfall of $88,000 a year. On the asset side, their home was worth $650,000. It was free and clear. On the investment side, Ed's retirement would be $1.9 million in his retirement program. Amy's retirement is $128,000. Their joint account is $1,020,000. Investment assets, a little over $3 million. Total assets, about $3.7 million. So one of the issues we're dealing with is creating enough cash flow to maintain the same standard of living, especially given the risk of longevity running for both of them, controlling projected healthcare expenses, and the sequence of return risk, especially because Ed went through the downturn. In the downturn in 2001, in 2002, he came through that okay. He was much younger and felt that he could ride it out, which he did. He stayed invested in stocks, but the one that really shocked him was the one that took place in 2008 and 2009, where he lost a lot of money in his retirement plan, started taking more risk, and ending up losing money. He got invested very heavily in the gold market in 2011. And then, especially, you got to remember, back in 2011, silver hit $50 an ounce. Gold hit $1,900 an ounce. He got caught up in that and lost quite a bit of money. What we did is we took Ed's retirement plan of $1.9 million, put it into a balanced account between laddered individual bonds and dividend paying stocks. We did the same with Amy's retirement, and we did the same with some of their personal income. So total investment income was $94,500, grand total $139,488, less budget expense of $133,000, leaving a surplus of about $6,500 a year. And we told them as much as possible that we needed to have some dividend paying stocks, something in his portfolio that was going to increase over time, because their biggest risk, because, I mean, we're barely skating by with a surplus of $6,500. So we encourage them, you know, if you could wait a couple more years to retirement, number one, that's less of a drawdown on their expenses. Number two, their Social Security benefits would be much higher. So we're trying to talk them into staying on and working a few more extra years, because it would make a big deal of difference. And then also, by going into individual bonds and more conservatively valued with risk control, being able to protect them during the next downturn and recession in bear market. Because one thing Ed said is, I do not want to go through, same thing with Amy, I do not want to go through another 2008 and 2009 again. We recommended that they work an extra 2 years to help increase their retirement nest egg. We also recommended to reduce the risk of a bear market, that we had laddered bonds, and we scaled back the risk of the things that he was in. We also recommended that they sign up for Medicare Advantage plan, and Amy sign up for a high deductible individual policy upon Ed's retirement. Ed's work life insurance policy is portable, so he can keep a permanent life insurance policy upon retirement. This could be used upon his passing to help create additional assets for Amy. And this was one of Amy's main concerns. She goes, you know what, given the longevity of my family and given the fact that I will probably outlive Ed, that was the cushion that sort of made her feel more at ease, that upon Ed's passing, remember, if you're a married couple, when one spouse passes away, you lose one Social Security check. The surviving spouse can either take hers or her husband's, whichever is greater, but one Social Security check will be gone. And so keeping that life insurance policy assured Amy that the loss of that income would be made up with the life insurance. We also recommended that Ed and Amy change investments to a more conservative, well-diversified portfolio. We also recommended that Ed reduce the company stock exposure, since he held a very large concentrated holding that represents 10% of their net worth. And one of the problems we had to point to him is that, you know, he was, I forget what the figure was, I think it was over 20-something percent he had invested in the gold market. And then, of course, we had that bear market in gold that lasted 3.5 years. And when you have over 20% of your assets in that area, he took a very, very big hit. So we didn't want him to be invested in 10% or more in any one asset class or even one industry. Also, given Amy's long life expectancy, we advise that Ed delay retirement and his Social Security to increase cash flow. We recommended that he use the portability on his life insurance so that he had permanent coverage of $400,000 for the rest of his life, which we were going to use, which would come in handy to make up the loss of Social Security benefits, assuming Ed would pre-decease Amy. But that was the plan, John. And it's like we said, one of the things that we're seeing more and more as a result of longevity is working longer, reducing lifestyle, moving to a cheaper location. In their case, their house was free and clear, so there was no need to do that. Their lifestyle, pretty much we could contend with, but the real key here was working a couple extra years and then also implementing active management and risk control to avoid another 2000, 2002, and a 2007, 2009 bear market.
And coming up tomorrow on the program, Elizabeth Morgan will be our specialist on offshore trusts right here on Lifetime Income. Anything that we're looking at in particular for programs to come?
We've got a couple more technical programs that we're going to do. I'm really going to be spending a lot more time talking about questions you need to ask yourself when you're either working with an advisor or you're planning your own retirement, because they often go overlooked. And as I mentioned, the statistic, 20% of retirees today will end up dying broke because of longevity and improper planning. So we're going to spend a lot more time. So hopefully you will not find yourself in that condition as you plan for retirement or as you age. So we're going to be covering that. Also, we're going to be doing a couple of health shows that are going to actually blow your mind on several health-related issues. We'll have some of those coming up in the weeks ahead. All that in the next couple of weeks, so you'll want to stay tuned. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for tuning in to Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.
Today's Lifetime Income program was an encore presentation of a previous Lifetime Income show heard earlier this year. Next week, we'll be back on our normal broadcast schedule.